Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Since the start of the conflict in Ukraine, many Western officials have said the quiet part out loud, and they aren't subtle. Ukraine is merely a small puzzle piece, part of a much more grandiose agenda. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Dmitry Babich. He's a political analyst and editor at InnosMe Internet Media Project. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. Victoria Nuland, at a conference call, she was on Zoom with a Ukraine-friendly organization, raising funds, awareness, all kinds of things here. And again, Victoria Nuland says the quiet part out loud. She said it prior to the coup about midwifing the coup, and now she's talking about, well, we've been with you, Ukraine, for four to five months for your counteroffensive. So can you explain to me how you can say you're not a co-belligerent and still say you're involved with the planning of a counteroffensive, which is obviously directed against Russia? How do they square it? Because they seem to be getting away with it, George.
They are indeed. In fact, you're going back to her midwifing the coup in 2014 isn't exactly consonant with the idea that this was a revolution, and that the Maidan was a rejuvenation of the country. I mean, it was orchestrated by Victoria Nuland, and she was explicit about it. And in much the same way, when she blurted out about the biolabs in Ukraine, and again, anyone who brings up the issue of biolabs, conspiracy theory, even though she actually said this before the Senate. But what's really alarming about what she said, which is that we've been involved in this for the past 4 to 5 months, is that Ukraine is increasingly daring in its attacks on Russia inside Russia. I mean, the other day, we had Ukrainian drones apparently attacking a Russian ship guarding the Turk Stream natural gas pipeline. This was a very elaborate, complicated operation. We're asked to believe that Ukraine carried this out, miles and miles away from Ukraine. It's very unlikely Ukraine has that kind of sophisticated intelligence that could do this. And it so happened that there was an unmanned American spy plane in the vicinity. So, and given also the attacks on Belgorod inside Russia, it's increasingly clear the United States is directly involved with attacks on Russian targets on inside Russia. And remember, also, we had a Ukrainian attack on an airfield in Rostov, that housed a long-range Russian strategic bomber. So given all of that, it's hard to see how Russia can avoid, in the very near future, targeting American hardware. I mean, whether it's spy planes, drones, satellites, but Russia has to do something. I mean, we have it now from the horse's mouth, Victoria Nuland.
Well, Dima, she's taking ownership of this counteroffensive with their own words here. So, I mean, you have to explain the logic to me, and it's a pretty grim logic. So if Ukraine's counteroffensive fails, Victoria Nuland fails. And I don't think that they're going to have a reassessment. Okay, I think they're going to say, we got to try it again. Okay, I mean, this is the logic of the escalation ladder. Okay, and the U.S. is intimately involved in that escalation. And George is absolutely right. At one point in time, there's going to be a reaction from Russia, because they will say, well, you are a co-belligerent in this conflict. You're targeting our people, our hardware, our country. You can't get off scot-free. So the first part, Dima, is the U.S. taking ownership of the counteroffensive?
I don't think she will be held responsible. Even if there is a counteroffensive and if it fails, she will never be punished. The United States States is operating according to the rules of an ideological state. And we know these rules very well in the former Soviet Union. You know, you may make a huge mistake, a huge technical miscalculation. You may lose people, money, resources. If what you did corresponded to the prevailing ideology, you won't be punished. And of course, you won't be punished for a lie, because lies are allowed in ideological states. I mean, how many lies did we hear from Victoria Nuland and her likes, you know? In 2014, Russia is complaining that the United States deceived Gorbachev in 1990. The United States says, oh, no, there was no paper. In 2014, there was a paper. You know, the representatives of France, you know, the foreign ministers of France, Poland, and Germany signed with Yanukovych and with their people from the opposition, Mr. Yatsenyuk and Mr. Klitschko. They signed the paper saying that Yanukovych would hold early elections, you know, violence would be stopped, Maidan would stop. And then, you know, next hour, you know, the Ukrainian opposition breached that agreement, and the West didn't say a word. And they never recalled it. And then Mr. Poroshenko, several years later, said, we just lost that paper. We can't find it anywhere. You know, it was on television. It was everywhere. The text was published in dozens of newspapers. And these people pretend they forgot. So in the same way, if in 2 months this counteroffensive fails and a lot of people die, and people ask Victoria Nuland, didn't you say that you have been involved in this? She would say, let bygones be bygones. Let's move on. You know, this is all history. You know, don't talk to me about the coup. Don't talk to me about the counteroffensive. We're planning another offensive. You know, so the problem with impunity is that when these people are not punished, they make the same crimes again and again, and then they accuse the others.
Adina, that's very dangerous. That's a very danger. I agree with you, but that's very dangerous, George, because when there's not much more room on the escalation ladder, if you know what I mean. Okay, because the U.S. has committed so much hardware, so much money. A lot of it is unaccounted for, nonetheless. And then we have this commitment by a very high senior ranking official of the U.S. administration that's been working on the Ukraine portfolio for a very long time now. They're not going to take defeat lightly, okay? And, you know, of course, you know, Zelensky will be blamed and things like that. But this is much bigger than Ukraine. That's the whole point of this program, George.
Sure, it is bigger. And let's remember, the official position of the United States is that we don't tell Ukraine what to do. We have no oversight on what Ukraine is doing. Ukraine is fighting its war according to its wishes. All we're doing is providing them with the hardware for them to defend themselves. And then we have Stoltenberg, the NATO Secretary General, repeatedly saying NATO is not a party to the conflict. But we all know that this is complete nonsense. And so given this, you know, you would have to see that Russia cannot just simply go on sitting on its hands when it is, you know, stated explicitly by U.S. government officials that they are directly involved in attacks on Russian territory and on Russian property. Remember, I mean, the attack on that ship guarding the South Stream pipeline, this was basically, I mean, that we already had the attack on the Nord Stream natural gas pipeline. We don't know who did it. So now it looks like they're trying to attack the South Stream natural gas pipeline. That's targeting, obviously, Hungary. It's also targeting Turkey. So the U.S. and Ukraine are involved in that. Now, you know, the NATO's position all along has been, well, Russia is too scared to escalate. So we basically have a blank check. You know, we can put out this nonsensical story. We're not a party to the conflict. We don't really take any real active involvement in anything Ukraine is doing. But should Russia escalate, you know, we're ready to, you know, launch World War III. We're ready to, you know, press the button. They, however, are afraid. This is a very dangerous and delusional state of mind for the West to take.
Well, Dima, going back to Victoria Nuland, I think, you know, we have a track record here. Her instrumental role in the coup in 2014, overthrowing the Yanukovych government, democratically elected, by the way. She comes back to power in the current administration. This is unfinished business. And her goal is the regime change in Russia. That's what it's all about. Ukraine is just a convenient puzzle piece for her to get there, and very effective one, let's be fair, okay? She's not stupid, okay? She's quite maniacal, and she's not going to take the answer no, Dima.
Well, the problem with her is that she's unable to have a dialogue. I mean, after 2014, she just insisted on being allowed to come to Russia and have talks. You know, there was
allowed once after that.
Yes,
much to my bewilderment, to be honest with you.
Exactly. I just wanted to recall that story. You know, there were already hundreds of Russian officials, parliament members, businessmen who were barred from the United States, even though they didn't participate in any coups outside Russia. You know, they didn't in any way impair U.S. interests. But she absolutely insisted that after she orchestrated that coup, after she acknowledged that her phone call with Jeffrey Pyatt was genuine, you remember what she said about the EU then and how they determined who would be Ukraine's next prime minister. They were just fantasizing. You know, they didn't really mean it, or because we know that the United States does not interfere in Ukrainian affairs. In the same way now, she was just fantasizing probably about that counteroffensive, right? So her attitude is, the very well-known attitude of tough guys, you know, tough businessmen. My property is my property, right? And as far as your property is concerned, we can negotiate, right? So she has the right to come to Russia. She must have the right to change regimes in the post-Soviet states. And as far as our rights are concerned, that can be negotiated from the position of force after Russia suffers a defeat. This is their attitude. And the problem with these people is that there is absolutely no room for dialogue. You know, dialogue is possible when you agree on at least some things, you know. Dialogue in the modern West is impossible because people agree on 100% or 98% of what they discuss. Dialogue between the EU, the United States, and Russia is very difficult simply because there is no room, you know, there is no foundation on which you can build something together.
Well, it goes back to your point that this is very ideological. Because having negotiations is compromise, and compromise is not allowed. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the Home Edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Let's go back to George in Budapest. George, one of the things you and I have talked about with Dima over these few last 15 months or so is how someone like Victoria Nuland can make a statement like that, obviously showing the true position of the United States. And it goes by without really any comment. We comment on it because it's a stark portrayal of what they've been saying all along. But then we have the escalation ladder again, you know, no tanks, no missiles, no long-range missiles, no F-16s. And then it continues and it continues here. And that's why, and, you know, before RT was taken off of YouTube for months before the conflict started, I kept talking about this escalation ladder. And now we're at the final rungs because, again, the U.S. will not accept the answer no. Its objective is regime change in Russia, ultimately to break it up. It is existential. The problem for the U.S. and the West is that they've made it existential. So Russia really has no other option. It has to play this existential game, which is horrifying to think about.
Yeah, no question. And as you said, Peter, for the Biden administration, this is unfinished business. I mean, this is what they had intended back during the Obama years. I mean, they got themselves very heavily involved in Maidan, as was shown by the that intercepted telephone call. And the moment they came to power, they intended to continue with this. And yeah, the goal is regime change and the destruction of Russia. Newland is a truly a fanatical person. You know, the family, you know, of which she's a member, the Kagans, you know, they are the, you know, the arch neoconservative family in the United States. You know, the patriarch, you know, Donald Kagan, and then you have her husband, Robert Kagan, and then her brother, Frederick Kagan, and then you have this woman, Kimberly Kagan, who's Victoria Nuland's sister-in-law, who runs this organization, Institute for the Study of War, that the media treat as somehow a disinterested, dispassionate academic body, which always says how well Ukraine is doing and how badly Russia's doing, you know, by strange
influence. It's interesting. I'm glad you brought it up, George, because in the same conference that she attended remotely, she talked about how Ukraine was basically going to be the beacon of democracy for the entire world. And, you know, and again, I'm paraphrasing here, bringing peace and stability back to Europe. But the problem is, it's people like Newland and the organization, as we all know, is NATO, is these are the destabilizing forces in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what they've been trying to do. And of course, the Europeans, hapless Europeans, they've simply gone along with this. Stability, this is completely destabilizing Europe, getting Europe into this, permanent conflict. And, you know, you got to say, Newland has been successful. I mean, if you think of what it is that they have achieved, they have a war between two essentially brother nations, nations that are close to each other, you know, by religion, history, culture, tradition. And they've broken up any kind of a partnership between Russia and Europe. So the Americans are sitting pretty. So why would they end this? You know, they're happy to just go on. I mean, the sums involved, like, you know, they're saying it's $160 billion. I mean, it is just a staggering amount of money. And apparently, you know, they have all these negotiations, you know, with the budget, you know, what's McCarthy going to do? What Biden going to do? And they're arguing. The one thing no one touches is this staggering sum of money that's just, you know, being thrown out of the door to Ukraine. So the Americans think, okay, this is good investment. We're destroying Europe as an autonomous entity, and we're destroying Russia. So yeah, let's just keep the money spigot going.
Yeah, and Dima, I'm glad you made reference to the inability of these neocons to negotiate here. But that can be taken as a positive on Russia's side, is because, and it's something I've been saying from the very, very beginning, is that negotiating with these people is a fool's errand. The most glaring example is the Minsk process, okay, where we know that all the major Western parties essentially just lied, and they've admitted it. Okay, so I mean, that's why it's a positive for Russia, because it knows its path forward. It doesn't have to. There's no contingency. Maybe we could talk to this person or this plan or like that's all off the board here. And so Russia can be laser focused here. But do you think it will take the bait? Because this is what I find very scary, is because people like Newland, as George and I have discussed on the Gaggle repeatedly, is that they don't think the Russians will go up the escalation ladder. And that's to their advantage. They can break every single red line they want. And you know what? They have quite a few. Cross quite a few here. So, you know, in a positive way, Russia has to move forward with its agenda here. In a negative way, you don't, you basically dealing with what Nixon called the crazy man scenario. The Americans could do anything. Dima.
Well, you're quite right that it's a kind of misunderstanding, but let's be clear how each of the sides misunderstood the other. You know, the Russians thought for many years, Westerners are pragmatists. You know, they're not going to destroy Nord Stream 2 because it's good for them, right? They're not going to have a conflict with Russia for nothing because, you know, we're not aggressive. So they're not going to be too tough on us simply because it's against their own interests. You know, we can make a lot of money in Russia. And that was a mistake, because the EU and the United States, these are now ideological formations. which don't care about, sometimes, you know, they don't care about practical use of what they do, and they don't care about the money. They can lose the money if that is needed for.
Well, they just print it, Tima, and just go into debt. Yeah.
Yes, yes. So in that sense, Russia was in error, because we thought that, you know, 2,000 years of pragmatic Western civilization, you know, no, these 2,000 years are coming to an end. The West, on the other hand, you know, guided by this ideology, they always presumed that Russia is ruled by cowardly, greedy oligarchs, who, of course, have a very sluggish economy, which will not sustain the sanctions. You know, this is all corrupt and kleptocratic. And this is not true. If we had been so bad, you know, Russian economy would not have sustained Western sanctions for more than a year now. So this is the most dreadful thing about it. People are guided by their own ideology. And one of the postulates of that ideology is that Russia would not overreact. Russia would not use some kind of destructive weapons, because after all, Ukraine was part of their country and they're sensible people, and Putin does not want to die, and all of that nonsense. So basically, I think that we are in a very dangerous spiral, you know, when, because of the ideology, people are getting closer and closer to a very dangerous brink. And in that sense, I would like to say that the West keeps talking about personal dictatorships. You know, they demonize people whom they declare dictators, Putin, Erdogan, even though how can a dictator be close to losing an election? I see contradiction in terms here. A dictatorship of an ideology is much worse than a personal dictatorship, because if you have a dictator, a human, he can feel pity or he can be scared. Ideology knows no pity and it knows no scare, you know, for an ideology, because this is not human, a human being. What matters is its victory, you know, and anyone who disagrees is an error in the machine. You know, he or she has to be dismantled. And that's what we are facing from the West right now.
You know, George, again, you know, going back to these public pronouncements, saying the quiet part out loud, it's so tragic that corporate mainstream media doesn't pick up on these things at all. I mean, it's only independent media that actually talks about these pronouncements. Okay, you know, antiwar.com might pick it up or something like that here. But again, how democratic is this? There is no debate whatsoever about this policy. And this is, you know, Vietnam was awful and terrible for people that lost their sons there. Same thing about Iraq, Afghanistan. That's fine, okay, but it was never existential for the U.S. and the West, and now we have this situation where it is existential, and there's no debate about it at all. It is truly extraordinary.
It really is, and I can't really explain it. That, you know, how come that there doesn't seem to be any awareness on the part of the wider public anywhere in Europe, in the United States, of just how dangerous the situation is. I mean, remember, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis was so terrifying, you know, throughout the world, that, you know, it essentially inaugurated, you know, a decade and a half of a detente policy, because you know, the consensus view was United States and the Soviet Union cannot get themselves again into such a terrifying confrontation. But there is none. And I think it comes about because the elites have been putting out the story that Russia is too scared to take us on. So we can do whatever we want. We can blow up their pipelines. We can attack them on their own soil. You know, we can even attack the Kremlin. But Russia is too scared of us. And, you know, we have when Liz Truss says, yeah, I'm ready to press the button. So we are ready to press the button. Russia knows we're ready to press the button. Russia, however, is not ready to press the button. And we know Russia isn't ready to press the button. So what's there to worry about? Let's just keep going. And, you know, the position now of what Dima said about this ideology, remember, the Western position now is not just, well, we're going to defeat Russia militarily, but we want to arrest Putin and take him to The Hague. I mean, that's now the official Western position. That's not going to be abandoned. So there's never even going to be any withdrawal of sanctions because the West position is, oh, well, we need Putin. Give us Putin. You know, just like, you know, to the Serbs back in the 90s, give us Milosevic. We're not going to lift sanctions until you give us Milosevic. So that's now the Western position. Give us Putin. So it's you know, this extraordinary, extreme position. And yet there, the public just simply says, oh, that's fine. Let's keep going.
Yeah, well, the takeaway I take from what both of you have said here is that it's impossible to argue with stupid, okay? And that's the dilemma that we've all found ourselves in. They're not open to any kind of conversation or negotiation, and that's why when that's closed down, we go up to the abyss, and that's where we are. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow, and I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Rostock rules.